You know how about a couple of months ago there was all this outrage about Ben Affleck being being cast as Batman in the new Superman sequel that will feature Batman? That's the deal, right? It's a Superman sequel, right, Dan?
Yes.
To the really bad Superman movie.
Very bad Superman movie.
Did Man of Steel actually do well enough that it that? Because I thought it turned out to be pretty much a disappointment.
I think it was. It had that initial big box office, and the DC universe is hoping to, you know, match with the Marvel universe, and therefore are kind of, you know, pushing it through, even though necessarily the box office receipts don't necessarily justify one. They're like, all right, first one was okay, and it made a lot of, you know, it made a decent amount of money. If we make a better one, you know, hopefully they get the ball rolling and they can combine more superheroes.
And in this world, is it the same dude going to play Superman who played Superman in Man of Steel, that Henry Cavill?
Cavill, yes.
So he's going to play, but in that universe, like, the Batman storyline isn't the same as the Christian Bale storyline.
Correct. This features an older, beaten-up Batman.
Now you're a fan of this stuff.
Yes.
Is Ben Affleck a bad choice?
He wasn't, you know, the name that comes to mind. You know, I don't like passing judgment until I see it. You know, obviously Ben Affleck's done a lot of bad acting and he's done a lot of good acting. So it could either go both ways depending on which one. You know, it was one of those things where one of the other names was James Brolin. And that's
Josh Brolin.
I'm sorry, Josh Brolin. James Brolin would have been interesting.
Yeah.
But Josh Brolin, he would be more in line with what the character is. He's got that grizzled, like, old man, weathered, like, I'm a young Tommy Lee Jones looking dude.
And he played a young Tommy Lee Jones in The Last Men in Black.
So it's one of those things where that casting decision on the surface seemed more natural than Affleck, but who knows.
Well, people were still got their, you know, they got their undies in a bunch about it. And also they announced the couple that's going to be in 50 Shades of Grey, that Charlie Hunan and Dakota Johnson. But this Charlie Hunan guy, he dropped out. So now I guess they're looking for another person to take over, but I guess Dakota Johnson is still going to be in it. And Dakota Johnson, by the way, who I think is great. She is Don Johnson and Melanie Griffith's daughter. And I think she's awesome. And she was on a show called Ben and Kate that was on Fox last year, and it didn't even last a full season. It lasted just about a full season. A really sweet, really, really funny sitcom last year that did nothing. Like, nobody watched it. I was, like, the only person who watched it. Ted, did you ever watch Ben and Kate?
Nope. Never saw it.
Nobody did. But it was a really funny show, and she's awesome on it. And then people started going nuts about this, the 50 Shades of Grey. Now, I haven't read 50 Shades of Grey. I've just heard about it. And then it's one of those, that's aimed at women, right? 50 Shades of Grey?
Oh, yes, very
much so. It's like porn for women, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, I've heard about it, I know of it, and obviously that there was an outrage about that. Well, I also have some casting decisions from the past that have sparked outrage. See if you can name some of them. 312-981-7200. And also, what are some of the worst casting decisions that you can name? Or what about unusual casting decisions that paid off? Like, no one thought this person was going to be good. Nobody thought that this person was right for this part. And then it turns out they knock it out of the park and do a really great job. So, worst casting decisions of all time. Unusual casting decisions that paid off. Things like that. So, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. You can send your texts with your worst casting decisions or unusual casting decisions that paid off. Send your text to 24720 anytime you want. Sign your name on those texts to 24720. You can also leave your comments at facebook.com/NickDShow. Now, this is not the first time that people went nuts over a cast of casting Batman. Because I don't know if you guys remember, but when they announced that Michael Keaton was going to play Batman, everybody went nuts.
Yeah, people were not happy.
No. They were. You can't please anybody, I think, especially in the world of comic books. I think people who are comic book fans are just they're nuts. I think some of them are nuts.
Oh, they are. But you got to admit that was an odd choice. I mean, it was just Michael Keaton was just Mr. Mom. He had never done anything kind of serious.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, it was he had done, well, he did. I mean, he did a movie called Clean and Sober, but that was not a Batman movie. That was one of the first serious movies he ever did.
Jack Frost was still years away.
But Clean and Sober was kind of the first one out of the gate. It's actually a very good movie too. If you've not seen Clean and Sober, Michael Keaton's really great in it. But a lot of people were like, "Oh, Michael Keaton can't play Batman. Are you kidding me?" And Tim Burton took on the role of director, and they had worked on Beetlejuice together. And everybody was like, "Well, you know, Batman, that's a completely different animal than Beetlejuice." I mean, and everybody was like freaked out. They were thinking that they were going to turn Batman into Beetlejuice. And I remember there was an uproar over it. It never stops. I mean, people complain about bad casting or the casting of someone who's not right for a part, especially if it's based on a book or especially if it's based on a classic character or a comic book icon. You know, people have very strong opinions on it. And it turned out to be, I thought it turned out to be great. I thought Michael Keaton was really good. In fact, Michael Keaton stars in my favorite Batman movie of all time, which is Batman Returns, which I like better than any of the Christopher Nolan movies. And I think Batman Returns is terrific. That's the one with Michelle Pfeiffer, who is so awesome as Catwoman. Christopher Walken is one of the villains in it, and Danny DeVito is the Penguin. That is my favorite Batman movie of all time, and I thought Michael Keaton was very good in both of those movies. Now, as a fan, you were a kid, though, Dan, when the first Batman movie came out, right?
Yeah, you know, it was one of those things where I didn't know Michael Keaton from anything else leading up to it, so it wasn't that much of a thing for me. Obviously, the movie's great, and then just obviously the performances that came after just solidified how good he was in the role.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what's funny is that I guess a lot of people who wanted to see a faithful version of Batman, especially since The Dark Knight Returns, the Frank Miller thing, had come out about a year before, and everybody wanted to see that type of Batman. And I think a lot of the comic book fans who loved Batman were concerned that they were going to turn it into an Adam West thing, like it was going to become yet another Adam West thing. And by the way, I love the TV series Batman. I mean, I know it's campy and it's wacky and it's not necessarily, you know, very faithful to the character. It's unbelievably entertaining and hilarious. And the movie version,
that's fantastic,
with the shark repellent
yes.
I mean, and all the villains. I mean, it's great. It's so much fun. So, I mean, I realize that those are different animals, but people were kind of freaked out when they heard that Tim Burton and Michael Keaton, but it turned out great. So some of these things do turn out well, others not so much. Now, I know a lot of people were very upset with Stanley Kubrick's version of The Shining, speaking of Halloween and horror movies, which a lot of people consider to be a pretty classic horror film. But a lot of people didn't like the adaptation and how Kubrick really radically changed it, and the casting of Jack Nicholson, because if you look at the role, it's supposed to be a guy who slowly goes insane. And casting Jack Nicholson out of the gate, he's already nuts because he's Jack Nicholson. So it's like people were like, well, he really was already crazy. Like, you know, there was no arc here. There was no buildup. There wasn't a slowness to his descent into madness because he's Jack Nicholson and he starts off nuts. But I really like him in The Shining. And I've read the book. The book is completely different, but I still love the movie. So anyway, casting decisions that made people crazy. Got a bunch of them here, and I want to hear from you. What casting decisions made you nuts if, you know, you're a fan of a book or a comic book or something and you didn't think that this person was anything like the part that they should be playing? Or how about unusual casting that actually paid off, like Michael Keaton in the Batman movies, or at least in my opinion it paid off. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 o'clock. After 3 o'clock, Trevor Marriott is going to join me. He is a former Bedfordshire murder squad police officer over in the UK, and he believes that Jack the Ripper never existed, and he's done extensive research on it, and we're going to talk all about it. It's fascinating stuff. Kind of a nice, creepy little legendary myth story for your Halloween time. That's coming up after 3. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Bad casting or unusual casting? Casting decisions that sparked outrage. We were just talking about how years ago Michael Keaton caused outrage by being cast as Batman until the movie came out and it turned out to be great. Now people are going nuts over Ben Affleck, and we have other examples here of casting decisions that made people go nuts. And that's what I'd like to talk to you about. 312-981-7200. What casting decisions do you think were horrible, miscast, or what unusual casting decision actually paid off? Somebody turned out to be really great when you didn't think they would be. 312-981-7200. Send your text to 24720. Here's Amy on WGN. Hi, Amy.
Hi. Hi, Nick. Good to hear you.
Thank you.
I'm glad you brought the subject up. It's been on my mind for such a long time.
Yeah.
50 Shades of Grey. It's a trilogy, you know. And I read the first book, and I saw the cover story of Town and Country magazine in September's issue, and there was Armie Hammer on the cover with his wife, who is absolutely gorgeous, too. But when I saw him, I thought, that is Christian Grey. And then I heard that they had cast this guy. I'm glad he dropped out now, because I was going to send letters of protest and call, movie critic on WGN?
Dean?
Dean Rich.
Yeah.
I was going to call all these people and say, look, please tell them to get Armie Hammer. He's beautiful. He is the person who looks like Christian Grey.
Ah, okay. But, well, now this Charlie Hunnam is now out.
Yeah, I heard. I was so glad.
Now, do you know who Dakota Johnson is?
Yes. And I think she does look like the girl in 50 Shades of Grey.
Okay.
Yeah. When you read the book and you picture, she would be very good.
Okay. All right. Now, so you're saying Armie Hammer is the guy that you want to
Armie,
see.
Armand Hammer.
Right,
yeah, from the old family of the philanthropist. Yes, he's very handsome. He's very erotic looking. It's a very erotic book, and you can just picture him in that role. Perfect. Perfect.
All right.
I don't know if the guy would want to do the role.
Right.
But he is the fat. That's the face.
Okay.
Amy. The look, everything. Please send the word out to everybody.
Yeah. I don't know how much control I have over it, Amy, but
we'll give
it a
shot. Listening, maybe the people listening to you will agree, too.
Okay.
And, Nick, I have a question for you,
yeah,
too. A few years, because I always listened to you over the last few years. A few years ago, you were very interested in cookbooks.
Yes.
I don't know if you still are.
Yeah.
Are you? Because I have a bunch of them. I have to downsize my life, and I have a lot of cookbooks.
Wow.
Of all different kinds. Are you still interested in them?
I mean, I love cookbooks. Sure.
I mean, you're still cooking, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, I'll send you a letter or something and tell you what I've got.
Okay. All right, Amy.
Come a look. I don't live too far away from Gale Street Inn, so
okay.
you come out.
All right, thanks, Amy.
Okay, but keep up Armie Hammer.
Okay.
Let's get a petition going.
It. Okay, Amy.
Thank you, Nick.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye. I like Amy. Getting a little steamy there. Armie Hammer. There were two of him in the Social Network. She would have I don't know if Amy saw that movie. You get double your Armie in that movie. You know, when I first saw that movie, when I first saw The Social Network, honest to God, I thought it was two guys. I'm not kidding. Now, Dan, when you saw The Social Network, did you already know that it was?
Yeah, I had read about it.
See, I didn't know that. And I went in, and then I found out afterwards, like, that was the same dude. And I was like, what? And of course, I'm like, well, sure, that's David Fincher's got to have some sort of mind-blowing special effect thing. Even if he's making a drama, a legal drama or a drama about the creation of Facebook, he's got to have some kind of mind-blowing technique in there.
I forget what magazine I was reading, but it was doing like the year-end movie film awards.
Yeah.
And it said, most amazing special effect created for a seemingly small but important role in the Armie Hammer in The Social Network. And then the one right underneath, the most amazing special effect that really had no place in the movie and nothing to really add to it and was just kind of there. Armie Hammer in The Social Network.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We're talking about casting, bad casting, weird casting, some casting decisions that have sparked outrage. We'll talk more about that. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of Trib Tower. And we're here till 5 a.m. The phone number is 312-981-7200. By the way, after 3 o'clock, we're going to be talking with Trevor Marriott who's a former Murder Squad police officer who using modern-day police techniques and forensic analysis, believes that Jack the Ripper never existed. We'll talk about that. It's fascinating stuff. That's coming up after 3. 312-981-7200. Send your text to 24720. We are talking about bad casting or casting decisions that caused outrage or unusual casting that somehow paid off. And we've got a bunch of texts here that I'm going to read, and we'll go to the phones in a minute here. Let's see. Jermaine from Romeoville says, Ben Affleck in Daredevil was terrible. Ryan Reynolds was great as Deadpool, but was bad as the Green Lantern. Yeah, that's another thing that people have brought up because of the Batman thing, because Ben Affleck, you know, people are complaining that Ben Affleck is going to be Batman. They bring up Daredevil as an example as to why he shouldn't be in another superhero movie. Ryan says, I wasn't involved in the outrage, but I remember when Heath Ledger was basically being crapped on by those who didn't understand. Boy, was everybody mistaken. I am hoping that Ben Affleck's choice as Batman is the same. You can basically look at any comic book movie and crap on anyone until they make it. Yeah, people were upset about Heath Ledger. I remember people were like, why is Heath Ledger? And he's on this list that I have in front of me of the 14 casting decisions that sparked outrage. In retrospect, you know, the fact that people complained about Heath Ledger, it's hard to believe because, I mean, Dan, when you heard Heath Ledger was going to play the Joker, what was your initial reaction?
I was intrigued. You know, I'd seen enough of, you know, his serious stuff that it was like, all right, this could be interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, and obviously, you know, he sort of went down in history as one of the greatest, you know, villain performances in a comic book movie history. And he went on to win an Oscar for it. So... Andrew Nebraska says, Mary Tyler Moore in Ordinary People as the Nasty Mother was a good surprise. That's true. She's great in that movie, in Ordinary People, and you would not... And that was interesting casting on the part of Robert Redford, who directed that movie, to cast Mary Tyler Moore, who was like America's television sweetheart, in the role of this relatively really nasty woman. So, all right, more casting decisions that caused outrage or weird casting decisions that paid off. 312-981-7200. Send your text to 24720. This is Jeremy on WGN. Hi, Jeremy.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Tom Cruise in Jack Reacher.
Yeah, that caused a lot. Now, I have not read the books, the Jack Reacher books, but I heard that I guess the guy is, what, 6'5", weighs about 260?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. And I've read all the books, been a fan. And, he's like 6'6", 250. He's supposed to be blonde hair, blue eyes, the hands the size of ham hocks.
Yeah.
I mean, they talk about his size all the time in the book because it becomes important. That's how he's able to beat all these guys up all the time.
Yeah.
And Tom Cruise is what? He's like 4'9 or something.
He's not 4'9, but, well, he's actually, I will say, he's about my height. I think he might even be shorter. I'm 5'8, and I'm a shorter guy. And I think he's like 5'7, 5'8 at the most. So, yeah, I mean, he's not a big dude. So,
and I'm a fan of him, you know, but I was disappointed when I heard, you know, they casted him. But I will give him credit for Vampire Lestat.
Well, see, that's the other one. I'm looking at this. The article that I have has him listed twice, once for Jack Reacher and once for Lestat. And I was one of those people. I'm a Tom Cruise fan. And
me too.
And I was one of those people when I heard, because I'm a big fan of the Anne Rice books, and when I heard they were making a movie out of it and he was going to play Lestat, I was one of those people who said, no, that's wrong. That's absolutely wrong. And even Anne Rice went on record as saying that she didn't want that to happen until she saw the movie.
And then she went back and said he did a great job, right?
That's right. And she took out like a full-page ad in the New York Times apologizing and saying that that Tom Cruise is really great in it. And he was. He was phenomenal in that movie.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I agree.
Yeah, sometimes it pays off. Now, you didn't see the Jack Reacher movie then, Jeremy?
No, I actually did. I did see it. It's okay, but he still didn't fit the role to me.
Well, yeah, I didn't see. I mean, I haven't read the book, but I did see the movie, and I kind of enjoyed the movie. I thought the movie was kind of fun. But again, I haven't read the book, so
I kind of always envisioned him to be maybe played by a young maybe Clint Eastwood or even like a Dolph Lundgren or something like that when he was, you know, much younger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of more fit the mold of how I imagine Jack Reacher to be.
Okay. All right, Jeremy, thanks for the call, man.
Great show, guys.
Thanks. Right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, it's hard, though, especially, you know, when you're attached to a book. You know what I mean? Like, when you read a book and you kind of... The thing about it is, you picture what a character looks like in your own mind. And it's very rare that someone can nail that. You know, like some casting director or some, you know, some producer can nail the image that you have personally in your mind from reading a book. So.
Well, sometimes, though, I mean, this is kind of my problem with Emma Watson being cast as Hermione. Mm-hmm. When it first started out, we're going back to the first movie, Sorcerer's Stone, she was way too cute. Mm. Hermione in the books is supposed to have buck teeth and not really all that attractive to look at. That's why it's a big deal around 3 or 4 when they go to this ball
and
all of a sudden she's a woman and everyone goes, oh, wait a minute, Hermione's a girl.
Yeah.
And when you had cute little Emma Watson from day one, it's like, how did you not realize that?
Yeah. Well, that I was, we were just talking about that the other morning, Dan. Remember, because I had I got a copy of The Bling Ring. Do you know this movie, The Bling Ring, Ted?
No, I don't.
It's a really terrific movie. Sofia Coppola wrote and directed it. It came out earlier this year. It just came out on DVD. It's based on the true story of those kids who would make friends with some of the TMZ. Sort of stars like your Lindsay Lohans and your Olsen sisters and your Paris Hiltons and stuff. And then they would rip stuff off from them. It was based on that true story of those people. And this is about those people, and Emma Watson's in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's a terrific movie. I highly recommend it. It's really, really entertaining. And Dan and I were talking about how Emma Watson has become quite an attractive woman. You mm-hmm. know? And like,
oh, yeah.
Wow. And it was one of those deals where it's like, you knew. From the moment you saw Sorcerer's Stone, you're like, you know, she's going to grow up.
She's going to grow up to be hot.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Natalie Portman. When I saw Natalie Portman in The Professional.
Oh, yeah.
And especially in Beautiful Girls. She was like 13 in Beautiful Girls. I was like, oh, my, she's just going to be a beautiful.
Well, I'll tell you, though, when you said miscast, she and her buddy Hayden Christensen were the two that immediately popped to my mind.
Oh.
I mean, talk about the least amount of chemistry between an on-screen couple. Yeah. Ever.
Boy, I mean, but the mistakes that Lucas made, that's, you know, casting is the least of the problems with those movies, man. Oh, man. You know, don't you think it all started to kind of, as a Star Wars fan, Ted, don't you think it all started to kind of go south in 97 when they re-released the movies theatrically with all the digital changes
and
stuff.
Oh, yes, and that we would never see the originals.
Yeah.
You know, they would never be that way again.
Didn't that start with a bad taste?
Yeah.
Wasn't that like, well, man, that's not cool.
Well, Lucas, believes this is his stuff, not the public's.
Well, that's an interesting question. When does it belong to the people? Have you seen, by the way, Ted, have you seen The People versus George Lucas?
No, I haven't.
Oh, you got to see it. It's on Netflix.
Okay.
It's a documentary about that, exactly what that question is. When does art belong to the people, if it ever does? And the whole movie is about that controversy and the hatred that even hardcore Star Wars fans have for those prequels. It's a really good movie, man. You'd like it. I'm sure you
would. I need to check this out. If it's on Netflix, I might look for
it. I think it is on. I'm almost positive it's on Netflix. If not, I mean, you can rent it. It's The People versus George Lucas. It's good. It's real good. Here's Richard on WGN. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I wanted to add, some years ago, My Fair Lady was produced, and Julie Andrews didn't play the part. Audrey Hepburn was cast
right.
by Jack Warner. And Audrey Hepburn took a lot of flack about that, and some think that might have hurt her career. I thought Julie Andrews should have been cast because she played the part on Broadway. She's pretty well known.
Yeah.
And Jack Warner is a little bit peculiar. He didn't want Rex Harrison to play the part. He wanted Cary Grant to get that. And also, Liza's father, he wanted to cast James Cagney in that spot, too, but neither one of them wanted to do it.
Wow, could you imagine Cagney? Well, Cagney was a song and dance man.
He was, and everyone would have done a good job, but the ones that should have gotten it were the ones who were on the Broadway play first. And I remember Jack Warner sold his interest to Warner Brothers, I believe, by 1972. And when 1776 came out, the musical in the movie form, there were no big names in it. They took the Broadway cast. So so he probably learned his lesson.
Yeah, that's true. All right, Richard, thanks for the call, man.
You're welcome.
Take care. Yeah, my fair lady. All right, I got a bunch of texts here to 24/7/20 about weird casting decisions. 630 area code, John Travolta was a strange choice that paid off big time in Pulp Fiction. Yeah, that was kind of like the big comeback, or the serious comeback. Because, you know, some people, everybody talks about how Pulp Fiction was this massive, huge surprise comeback for Travolta. But what they don't realize, what people don't talk about, and maybe they don't want to talk about, is the fact that he was in those Who's That Talking Baby movie, or whatever, those Look Who's Talking.
Look Who's Talking, that's right.
And those movies made a lot of money, man. And he was coming off of that. Now, maybe not. Maybe Pulp Fiction obviously was an artistic comeback in terms of, you know, the kind of the quality of the performance and the quality of the material as opposed to a stupid talking baby movie. But it wasn't like he was, you know, in a gutter somewhere when Quentin Tarantino came to him with Pulp Fiction. You know what I mean?
He did three of them. Look Who's Talking, Look Who's Talking 2, and Look Who's Talking Now.
What was the year of Look Who's Talking Now?
It was 89, 90, and then Look Who's Talking Now was 93.
Right. And you know what?
Right before.
Pulp Fiction was 94. So it wasn't like he would, like I said, wasn't like he was off the, wasn't like Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler. You know what I mean? Mickey, that's a true comeback. Although Sin City was a pretty big deal for Mickey Rourke. Wouldn't you say, Dan, wouldn't you say that also would be a, like, considered that, that's like the first one, that's like the stepping stone. I mean, the Wrestler put his comeback over the top completely. But don't you think his performance in Sin City was like, whoa, look at Mickey Rourke?
Yeah, it really played really well into the character. And obviously, that movie, all of the actors in that movie did a really great job with all the roles, but he stood out. So it
he
was
did.
Like one of those, like, it was a bunch of great performances,
yeah.
And then there was that one, which was even a step above.
And that was the first time that I realized that Frodo could be really creepy. And now he was in the remake of Maniac, where he's like, you thought he was creepy in Sin City, and he was. Creepy. But in Sin City, man, you see the remake of Maniac, you're like, whoa, Frodo! Whoa! All right, we'll take a quick break. We're talking about weird casting, bad casting, or strange casting that paid off. Real interesting article. You can read it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NickDShow. Quick break, and then, by the way, after the 3 o'clock news, Trevor Marriott's going to join us to talk about Jack the Ripper, man or myth. Nick DiGilio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And we're talking about weird casting or bad casting, casting decisions that sparked outrage and so on and so forth. Tons of texts to 24/7/20 that I'm going to read, and a lot of Facebook comments. Here we go. Nina says, an oldie but a baddie, Barbara Streisand in Hello, Dolly, 1968. I was among the millions who saw Carol Channing in the original play. She absolutely could have been given the opportunity to immortalize that performance on film. The less than spectacular box office returns for the now obscure film were a great example of karmic revenge, Hollywood style. Megan says, Tom Cruise in Jack Reacher is bad casting. I know in the books the character was very tall and looks nothing like Cruise. A lot of fans of the books were unhappy with that casting. 214 area code says, Kubrick, as good as he was, took a lot of liberties with screenplay adaptations of books. You mentioned The Shining. King himself was upset about how Kubrick made the story. And also Anthony Burgess was disappointed with what Kubrick did to A Clockwork Orange as well. Yeah, he kind of changed Lolita a lot, too. Kathy says, I could handle almost all the casting in last year's Les Mis, but watching Russell Crowe was painful. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Actually, that whole movie was painful. I think it's very apropos that the word miserable is in the title of that movie. I had a screener of that thing, and it took me like a total of 3 days to watch it because I kept stopping it, and I'm like, I can't go on. God, did I hate that movie. Oh. Paula says, Vivian Leigh in Gone with the Wind, totally wrong. That's what everybody says, and yet, you know, it's such an iconic role for her, but everybody I know who's read Gone with the Wind, and a lot of people I know have read Gone with the Wind and said that she is not right as Scarlett. Mike in Wisconsin says, Miami Vice, the movie, terrible casting, terrible movie, nothing like the original characters. I was with that movie for about the first hour, and then I liked the last, like, 15 minutes. But the first hour of Miami Vice I thought was pretty great, the movie. The TV show I thought was fine. I'm a big Colin Farrell guy. Love Colin Farrell. But I thought once they go, hey, let's go to Mexico and get a mojito, that's when I was like, what? What are we doing? 312 area code, recasting Harvey Dent in the 1989 movie. Harvey Dent, who later becomes Two-Face, was Billy Dee Williams, and in the comic he was black too. Billy Dee could have pulled off Two-Face instead of Tommy Lee Jones and that other guy. The other guy, I guess you mean, Aaron Eckhart from Dark Knight. Larry says, I just don't get it. I occasionally say, what the, when someone is cast, but it doesn't really get to me. What does get to me is when certain people are put in charge of a movie or an unnecessary sequel is made, or Michael Bay makes another movie with announced and the announced Avatar sequels. Yeah, that there's going to be like three Avatar sequels. I mean, and Cameron is doing them. That movie sucked. That Avatar sucked. It's a terrible movie. As I've said before, it's a movie that was written by a drunk monkey, as far as I could tell. Not even a sober monkey. A drunk monkey wrote the screenplay for Avatar. Really, seriously. One of the stupidest movies I've ever seen in my life. Michael said Daredevil was a good movie. All right, Michael. Scott says, what about Timothy Dalton as James Bond? Sorry, it didn't work for me. I thought Timothy Dalton was all right. Lisa says, if your caller Amy had ever seen Charlie Hunnam naked, she might change her mind. Yeah, he's a handsome man. I remember seeing him in that movie with Frodo about the hooligans, the soccer hooligan movie, and I was like, who's this guy? My ex-wife Heather was like, yeah, that's a good question. Who is this guy? He was in that Frodo beating people up movie where Frodo is like a hooligan and they're beating people up. Boy, Frodo keeps popping up here. Alexis Bledel should be in 50 Shades. All right. I'll go for that. Ashton Kutcher is Christian Grey. I'm not a huge fan, but he'd be a perfect fit. Jay says Yvonne Craig as Batgirl was perfect casting. That's one of my first crushes, Yvonne Craig. One of my very first crushes as a little kid was her as Batgirl. Here's a good one. Lee Majors in The $6 Million Man instead of Gil Gerard. Another good one was Harrison Ford as Han Solo instead of Tom Selleck. A bad one was John Shook. Tom Selleck didn't play Han Solo. It was Harrison Ford played Han Solo. Tom Selleck was supposed to play... Tom Selleck was supposed to not play Han Solo. He was supposed to be Jones. Indiana Jones. Yeah. No outrage to be a happy accident involving a classic. Originally, Buddy Ebsen was supposed to be cast as the Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz. He was allergic to the makeup, so he couldn't get the part. And how about Kurt Russell? How would he have been as Tom Solo? Han Solo, he tried out and he did really well. By the way, his screen test is online, Ted. You should check it out. Kurt Russell testing as Han Solo.
I think
Solo.
I've seen that one.
It's pretty great.
Did you know that Cary Grant turned down James Bond roles?
No, I didn't know that.
Cary Grant.
Wow.
He didn't want to be tied to the film series.
Wow.
Instead, they went with Sean Connery for Dr. No.
Interesting. Cary Grant. All right. We'll take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about Jack the Ripper, man or myth.